This is Jerry Smith with the Fisher Body Historical Team. We're doing an interview today at local 602 Union Hall in the conference room. And we're doing an interview with Bev McKelvey. And we're going to go around the room and introduce ourselves today.
Marilyn Colbert.
John Fedewa.
Doug Rademacher.
Cheryl McQuaid.
Mike Fleming.
And this is December 15th, 2005, at approximately 11:15. And Bev, would you state your name and spell your last name for us, please?
Okay. Beverly McKelvey, M-C-K-E-L-V as in Victor, E-Y.
And your address, please?
5230 Renee Street, Lansing, Michigan, 48911.
Okay. And we'd like your seniority date.
10/9/79.
Okay. And do you remember the first day you walked in the plant?
Yes, I do.
Could you tell us what it was like?
Well, it was really scary because I'd always worked in the office. And I cried the entire night, the first night on the line. And I had a lot of good friends who worked here, and they all came up to visit. They give me words of encouragement to tell me I could do it. And, you know, now it's really funny, but then it was terrifying, you know, because it was just different.
Where did you hire in? What department?
In trim, and back then it was, I think it was called B trim. And they did 98s and 88s, and I was putting in the quarter glass, not the quarter glass, but the trim, and I was right next to the quarter glass guy. And so the material I worked with was really, you could pick it up with your two fingers because it was just two pieces of molding to put around there. And, but it was, I didn't know anything about cars. I didn't know the difference in a 98 or 88. And you had to learn the colors, and it was a lot of colors. And they gave you this computer printout sheet, and you would be expecting a 98, and an 88 would come down the line. And, you know, and I didn't know what to do. You know, it was my first day on the job, and the girl, she was working with me, and then she'd go like, oh, now we've got to go. And you went across the line to get your 98 pieces, and on the side I was on, all the 88 pieces. So it was really weird because you kept going across the line instead of having all your stock on your side. And so after my first night there, I went home and I had nightmares about being run over by a car. Why, I don't know, but just because I guess because I went across that track all night. So it was pretty funny afterwards, you know, but then not so.
Beverly, I'm Doug Rademacher. Tell me, back to that first day, when you got the call to come to General Motors to Fisher Body Plant, and did you report in the front door, and what did they do with you? Did you have someone come take you somewhere? How did that all work? Because when you walk in the door, you don't see any vehicles. What happened there?
Okay, we came in the front, and we went upstairs, and I can't remember the lady who came and got us, you know. And we went upstairs, and then she said, we're going to, you know, take you to your department. So I can't even describe how I got there because, you know, I only ever been to medical when I had my physical, and I knew how to get there from going through the front, but the way she took us, I can't even describe. I mean, it was just a wonderland to me to see those machines and just see all those people. I had never been around that many people, you know, and just seeing how a car was actually put together because I had never seen that before either. So mostly I was just looking at everything. I just don't remember too much else.
Cheryl McQuaid.
Beverly, where did you used to work? You said you worked in an office.
I worked for the state. I worked, when I came here, I was working at public health, and I worked in the VD section, and I did, like, government reports for funding. And Fisher Body was hiring, so I put an application. It was more money than I was making, and you always want to make more money. And so I decided to put an application, and they called me. And I came, it was just about the money. I had no idea what I was going to be doing or anything.
And did you hire in on the day shift or the second shift?
Second shift.
And do you have children?
Yes, I have two, son and a daughter.
What was that like for your family?
Well, it wasn't that bad for them because they were good friends were keeping them. And the one girl, Bunny Street, well, now it's Bunny Richardson, and her mom kept my daughter because she was younger. And then a good friend kept my son and would send him off to school and everything. So it worked out really well. And she worked here, and I rode to work with her, and her mom babysat. So, you know, it just all fell into place really well.
When you worked at the state, did you work during the day?
Right. Then I had daycare at Humpty Dumpty Nursery. So, you know, then being at night, you know, I had to find some people to babysit. So that was different.
So what did you think about second shift in a factory?
You know, I didn't think anything about it. It was just the way it was. I didn't think that much about it because, to me, I've never had a problem with if I went to work during the day or at night. So even that wasn't something I thought too much of.
Marilyn Coulter. How was the transition from going from doing the office setting and the type of personnel and the culture there versus coming on second shift, night shift, 79, working on assembly line in a whole nother culture?
Like I said, it was terrifying. And I worked around some great people who helped me, like China and Debbie. And Debbie Roby worked down there then. Marion Jones. And they were really nice. And the person who broke me in on my first job was Arias. And I think her last name is Walker. Mm-hmm. And she just told me, you came here to earn a living. You didn't come here to really be friends or socialize or get close to people. You're here to earn a living. And you just don't let anyone talk to you anyway. You don't talk to them anyway. You respect them. They respect you. That's what it's about. And so that's what I took to heart. So I didn't really talk to anybody but the ones I knew. You know, and then James Henry, he and I are really good friends, his wife. So he would come and see me. Robert Hall, because my aunt was married to his brother. So, you know, people like that, they would just always stop and, you know, and talk to me. So, and then I never talked to the people, and it was just...
Go ahead.
So, and so they just would always ask me, Cat's got her tongue, you know, because I just didn't talk to a lot of people. And, you know, that's just the way it was.
And how long did you do that job? I'm sorry, Cheryl McCoy.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, I did that until I was laid off. And I worked down there for Doug Scott, and he was a pretty funny foreman. So, and then, I got laid off, I think it was the end of the year, or something like that, you know, because they start cutting back. And that's when they start having the problems, you know, with car sales back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Doug Rademacher.
Beverly, you hired in, you said, October 9th.
Mm-hmm.
So, part of becoming permanent is get 90 days in. Now, did you say you went out the door for the holiday weekend?
Well, before that, I had gotten hurt, so I was out on comp. So my seniority kept going. So I had my time, you know, from being injured. It's not that the job I had, the material you used was so heavy, but it was the pounding that I had to do, and you had to do a lot of pounding with your hand and a mallet to make these two moldings fit around that quarter window, because it had to be a tight fit, because when the glass set the glass in, you couldn't have a water leak, because who want a car with water dripping inside, you know? So it had to be a really good fit. So I did a lot of pounding, and not being ever having done a physical job, you know, just always in the office. So I had to have two operations on my hand. And so, therefore, you know, I was just out on cup.
Mike?
Beverly, so how long were you working before you sustained to injury season?
I worked about 10 days.
And sustained injuries enough to go out on workers' comp.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain a little bit how that worked for you back then? Did you go through the medical department? Did you go through therapy? What did they do?
Okay, I went through medical, but when it happened, since it happened on a Friday night, and when you're new, and I didn't really know anybody too much, and so I just kept working. I just, you know, I felt this pop in my hand, and it just hurt, and it was almost the end of the shift, like maybe 30 minutes, so I just simply kept working. I'm like, well, you know, it probably not anything, and so the next morning, on a Saturday morning, I woke up, and I couldn't use my hand, so I had to go to the emergency room, and they all, like, put it in a half a cast and everything, and they told me I had to see an orthopedic surgeon. And so that Monday, I reported back to medical, and they examined me and everything, and they had me just come down every day for some treatments. You know, like the back then, really scary, used to stick your hand down in this vat of hot wax, and then they would wrap it up, and treatments like that, and put in the whirlpool. And so I did that every day, and then finally, after I saw the doctor, and I had to have the surgery. And so then after that, I didn't come down for any more treatments.
And how long did you stay on the night shift?
Until I was called back to work in 81, and then I was on day shift, which I didn't care a whole lot for because that's awfully early in the morning, especially in the paint department. And so I was on that for maybe 6 months, and I got bumped to night, you know, thank goodness. So I found out I really didn't like working day shift, you know, in the factory.
This is Jerry Smith. You prefer the night shift then?
Right.
And you've stayed on it ever since?
Right.
In which department? You said you were in trim when you hired in. Have you always stayed in trim, or have you moved to other departments?
And when I came back in 81, I went to paint, and I was working with this really good former, Ray Durham. I really love that guy. He's crazy. And I was working up there, putting manifests on, and you just, because it came, and back then you put them on in paint, and they went to trim. I guess trim people knew what to put on the job or whatever. And so then I did that job. Fuck, God, it must have been until we went down in 84. And all you had to do was stick the paper on the front of the job, and then I would put the two bumper guards in, you know, where your tag went on the back of a cutlass, and then in the 98s, I would screw in two rubber bumper washer things into the deck lid and close it.
Did you explain what a deck lid is?
That would be your trunk. So, and so I was up on this ramp by myself, so that was really nice. It, you know, it was just me on this ramp, and I could see everybody, and I had no problem with being there on that ramp by myself. And across from me, it was the other person doing the job on the M line. And back then, it had been changed to the M line and the A line. So it was a fun job. I mean, it was easy to do, and I enjoyed the people, so I just liked it.
Mike Fleming?
It sounds as though, Beverly, you've been through more than one layoff in your time here.
I went through that one, and then in 84, that was my second layoff. And that was when we were going to start making the new job. And I had put in to work over in the two-tone area. And so one Sunday evening, it was about 6 o'clock, I got a call, like, could I come to work the next day from Keith Ward. And I go, like, okay, what time? He go, like, 6 o'clock. And I go, you starting at 6 in the evening now? And he go, no, like, 6 in the morning. And he go, like, oh, I know you don't like being here that early. But you come, you know, come in, and but I end up going to repair. And so that was totally different because you're all locked in a certain, you know, because you were contained in that one area. And so it was different. You know, I had always been out in the open spaces, and you just see people going by, and in repair, unless you got the coveralls on, you don't come in there. You're just like in another little world to me.
So you've been through at least two layoffs, where either of them significant amount of time, but did not very much time in.
Well, the one from when I was injured, now that was the longest because you figure I went out of here like the end of 79, first of 80, and then during that time I had two operations and I didn't come back till March of 81.
Okay. Have you been through any strikes at all?
Just the one. And I think that was the one that only lasted about 3 days back when they wanted to shut down for mass relief. Mm-hmm. And so that was the only one I experienced, and that wasn't long. Okay.
Through the change of coming from, you were in Trim, was that Beeline Trim, you said?
Right.
And you went into the paint shop. Was there a difference in the type of people between Trim and paint? Is there a difference? Were there more women, less women? What was it like?
Well, what I didn't look at it as men and women. I looked at the noise factor and how clean it was.
Okay.
You know, paint to me is pretty quiet until Friday. And that's when it got loud. And people, I had never seen this before because I'd never been to a factory. They'd start beating on a table, and then the next person would beat, and it'd go down the line. And I'm like, I think these people are crazy, right? Then someone would start hollering, and then the next person would holler, and it'd go down the line. But it was clean, you know, I liked that part. The floor looked clean, everything. But it was like, I was like, it must be a lot of young people down here or something, you know, because they do little silly stuff like this on Friday. And then when I got to paint, it seemed to be more mature people because they were more quieter to me. But like the paint department is more dirty and noisy. So, I looked at it like the noise factor and the cleanliness of the departments and not the people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I thought.
Well, you're talking about silliness and the types of things they did there. When you came in, were there any particular initiations that you've seen people had to go through, pranks or whatever pulled on individuals that you might have known of at the time that you came in or the time that you were in the paint or Trim?
Now, no, I didn't see anything like that. Probably because I was older, too. You figure most people come in here at 18 or 19, and I was in my late 20s. So that probably made a difference for me. So, but, you know, I just never saw anything. Then I, when I have free time, I read a book or something, so I don't spend a lot of time with other people who probably would do things like that, or, you know, I'm just not into being around a crowd who, how do you say, like, to do what everybody else is doing? Even in the shop, I just don't do it.
So, did you all have any dinners, special occasions where you had holiday festivities, anything like that in your area?
Oh, definitely, especially when I worked on 17 for Ray, and we always celebrated the holidays, Christmas, and we do the big dinner. And back then, you had the detonate spray, and if anybody know anything about detonate, it is a nasty job. And they were, like, down in the booth, and they were further back in the area, and we were up to the front. So we would always do the dinners where they came and ate first because, you know, they had to get clean. And we figure everybody else could get the relief guy to get them off to come and get food. But we always made a point at any dinner to make sure those people were first because I felt like, heck, they did the work and they had the nastiest job in that department. And we had, you know, that was the worst job in the whole department up there.
How about collections for people that might have had some hardships within their families and those types of things? You know?
Now, that I don't remember anyone having anything like that. Only thing we did was when someone had a baby, and we didn't care if it was the guy who worked there and his wife had a baby. We give him a shower, just like we would do the female. So I don't remember anyone having any family members to die when I worked on, you know, 17 in that area at all.
How about the Jerry Smith? How about the supervisor of techniques? Have they changed over the years from when you first went in to when we left the plant?
Well, I think so because when I first hired in, every supervisor I had knew my name and knew me. And they talked to you, and they came to the line, and they had conversations with you. and they knew what you were doing, and they could do the job. Now, and I, and like I said, I mean, I enjoyed all the supervisors I had, like Ray Durham, Ron Groshant, even Keith Ward, you know, I just enjoyed them. And they just treated you like people, because I've always had this attitude, I am not a child. And some foremen give you this attitude that you are a child and you should be submissive to them when you work with them. Well, I have the exact opposite attitude. We're all adults in here. They don't hire children to work in the factory. So, and that's the way I am. And for a while there, I had this troublemaker label on me, because, I mean, I just didn't let them talk to me like I was a kid. And I talked to them, and I, you know, let them know, you know, I'm not going to be disrespectful, but you're not going to be disrespectful to me. You're not going to scream at me, and definitely nobody's going to curse at me, you know. That's just the way it was for me.
So what made a good one or a bad one? Just the same thing you said, that just if they treated you equal and like a person instead of...
Right. And you know, I guess I've been real lucky, because I've never had a supervisor who's been messy or nasty. I've always worked in an area where you almost supervise yourself. Because I know some people say the supervisor's always looking over their shoulder. And when I worked for Ray, he stayed down wherever he stayed at, unless you needed something or he just wanted to talk to you about something, you didn't see him. And then when I worked in the metal clean area, we were isolated, so the supervisor didn't spend time back there. He had to be over on repair with the people who need to be supervised. So I guess I've just never had that problem. I guess I can't compare too much, because I've never had a bad one.
Cheryl McQuaid, you had mentioned that you worked for Doug Stott when you first hired him.
Mm-hmm.
And you said he was a funny guy. What was funny about him?
Well, okay, now you know how when you come in some days and you want to go home? Well, it depends on how good of a lunch you had that day. And he compared lunches. And whoever had the best lunch went home. So it was like the women were in competition. If they wanted to go home, they'd bake him a cake or something, like a pie or whatever. So it was eye-opening. And since I worked for the state, I'd never seen anything like that. But it was the way he operated.
Doug Rademacher. Beverly, what was the nicest thing you ever made for Doug Stott?
Well, since I don't cook, I never made anything for him. Nothing.
Beverly, Doug Rademacher again. You said that you saw a change as far as the supervision, but you said you didn't really ever have a bad supervisor. Did you notice, as we came to an end of the Fisher Body Lansing Car Assembly plant, that the corporation had started hiring youngsters, and they no longer were permanent supervisors? Did you experience any of them?
I did for just a little while, and I cannot call his name, because right after that, Nate came back. Now, what's Nate's last name? I can't even think of. Yeah, Nate Hall came back, because he had retired, and he took over the area, so he was still pre-dim, but since I had worked for him years before and I knew him, it was just like I still had a regular supervisor again, so I just had one of those other types for just a real short period of time. And like I said, and by being isolated in the metal clean area, supervisors don't tend to come to see you unless you call them, because, I mean, you just don't need one. So they spend all the time on repair.
Marilyn Coulter?
Could you please tell us what metal clean is? What did you have to do in metal clean?
Well, metal clean is the first department in the paint department. And we feed from the body shop. And the jobs are just raw metal. And it looks just like a car wash. And you have soap spraying onto the car, just like you would go to a car wash. You have the brushes going. And we just looked at the metal for, like, excess silver or anything that would be on there before it goes through the phosphate system. You want to take all that off because you're going to phosphate it, and that would have to be sand back down to the metal. And we would put a door hook in, which was just a little piece of metal you could balance on your finger, and stick it in the frame of the body and also in the door, so the phosphate would coat inside the door, and we would throw this, call the rifle bolt, but really it was just a latch that would keep the car from floating off in the phosphate system when it went through the tank. And that was it. So I did that job for like 18 years. I enjoyed myself back there.
Cheryl McCoy.
Beverly, how many people worked back in that area?
It was two on each line at the end. Before that, it was five on each line before they start cutting jobs. So you tend to have been pretty close to each other because we only saw each other. The only time we had visitors was if people were lost or you actually had to come back there for something. So other than that, you didn't see other people. So we were really close to each other.
And did you have, like, a partner?
The person across from me, and he did the exact same thing. And so, I mean, it's just... I guess because it's not a hard job. It's just that the smell and the wetness, and people didn't like to work back there for that reason. I mean, you weren't doing a real physical job. It was just it was wet, and it just smelled bad because of the different chemicals they use to go through those. I think it's like 9 stages or more back there.
And because of the fumes and everything, was there special safety equipment that you had to have? Or
no, back there, only thing you needed was earplugs and green rubber gloves because you dip your hand in the soap. And some people, the soap irritated and some it didn't. And since it was a high noise area, it was mandatory to wear earplugs.
And why was it so noisy?
Because of all them, okay, like your automatic sprayers. And like I said, it looked just like a car wash. You know how the brushes are rotating in the car wash? You had that rotation. And you had the, and then you had another system where it starts spraying on it. And it was just a lot of machinery back there just running those different things. And then over our head was the conveyor system where the thing went back to the body shop, what the car was on. And so that was over our head, flowing back to the body shop.
And another question. You said that it started out, there were 5 people, and then the jobs were eliminated. Did you take on that extra work? Were robots brought in? Where did that work go?
Okay, that was when they installed their car wash system with the brushes. And so, like, my partner and I, we stood on the floor, and we did the sides. And then you had 2 people on the ramp who did the hood of the car, the roof of the car, and the trunk of the car. So they eliminated those 2 people and put in the automatic system. And then the person who simply put that trunk latch in, they eliminated that job and had it sent to the body shop. So the person in the body shop made sure the trunk was secured to the body.
Mike Fleming.
Beverly, have you ever worked any changeovers?
Oh, no.
So, was there a reason why you didn't?
Well, I figure I worked enough. And where I worked at was extremely hot in the summer, and it was warm in the winter. So when it was time for vacation, I was getting the heck out of Dodge.
Have you had any involvement with your local union?
Well, now in the last, I think I've been involved like the last 4 years. I'm on the election committee, and I was on the women's committee. And now I volunteer for the women's committee, and I'm still on the election committee.
So what are some of the things you've done since you've been with those different committees? What do you do?
Well, with the women's committee, we've done the Christmas party with Santa, and worked at the picnic doing the kids' games. And then the election committee has been really an eye-opener. You know, before I was ever on any committee, when there was an election, and I'd always say, oh, yeah, they elect whoever they want to elect. You know, we always say that when it comes to politics, even national level. So then, you know, and other people say the same thing. So since I've been on the election committee, I've learned a lot. So when people say, oh, it's all rigged. And I said, no, it's not, because I know now what it's about. You know, I've sat there and I've counted, and you double count and you check. So now I know.
Cheryl McQuaid.
You mentioned that you didn't work the changeovers because it was hot in the summers and warm in the winters. Did you ever experience any extra heat relief because of where you worked, or was that not in effect?
No, we didn't get heat relief, probably because it was such an open area, unlike the paint booths who do give heat relief. And in the metal clean area, you're just on the ramp, and because the water has to drip somewhere, and you have these pans to recycle, but it's just all open. And so they figure, well, you've got all these fans, and it's open, and you're not locked in a booth with coveralls, and you could just wear your regular street clothes. And, you know, you could wear shorts, and so, you know, you could be as comfortable if you want to be.
Jerry Smith, what was your best job, and what was your worst job that you've done so far?
Well, my worst job would be the one in Trim where I got hurt, because I got hurt on it, not that it was so bad. And I would assume the best job would be back in Metal Clean, since I stayed there so many years. And people would say, why don't you do something else? It's so hot back here and it smells back here. But I would always say, well, why do I want to go somewhere and work hard? You know, it smells bad, it's hot. You know, I can deal with it. Drink more water. You know, so I guess that would be the best job I ever had.
Metal Culture. Bev, working back there, was it hard to get emergency reliefs being secluded like that? How did that work for you when you needed an emergency relief?
Well, you know, we were the type, since we're all so close and we still are, even though we're not working, we still keep in touch with each other. If, like, one day, I think Darlene slipped and fell and broke her wrist. So what you did, everyone just doubled up. Someone got on the phone. Someone else got her husband, and it was that type of mentality until you got the help you needed. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the way we always worked. If something happened on one line, mm-hmm. and we needed to get some, you know, body back there, I would go and do Dave's job. He would get on the phone, and since he knew a lot about the equipment, the skilled trades guys usually had to ask him how to do something back there. And I'd work his job where he'd show them how to fix the problem. And so we just tend to do it that way. So we didn't have any problems with getting help. It was just, you know, everybody just worked together until we got it.
Doug Rademacher. Beverly, you said you worked up in originally in Trim, and that you took that person that told you to, you came here for a living. And you said you stayed quiet and kept to yourself. Now, further on, you said it was more like a family. Now, did you think of your coworkers as brothers and sisters, as they call it in the union movement?
Yes. Now, in the metal clean area, I did, because, like I said, we're all still close and we still talk. I just talked to a couple of them this weekend. And you know, open houses, we get together. Weddings, I mean, it's just like anything personal, like Dave Fisher, I call him, talk to him, and Stephanie and Stanley, and, you know, we all have each other's phone number, we know where each other lives, we're in each other's houses. It's just that, you know, I guess I look at them as family because I spent a lot of time with them. And I could talk to them about anything, and I didn't worry about them going out telling anybody. Because it was really strange. Even when we took a break, we rarely ever left that area. We would go to the restroom, but we ate lunch back there. It just that we didn't tend to go out. I guess we used to call it the other world. That's what we call it, the other part of Fisher Body. And we just tend to stay back there for just about everything we did.
Jerry Smith. Has a coworker impacted your family life? I mean, has one of the people around you really impacted your family life?
Well, I would think Dave, because anytime I had any personal problem, even when my sister died last year, and, you know, he was always, you know, making sure he got with me how she was doing, and, you know, called me at home after she died, and And so I would say yes, because it's just weird that we're all so close, because we're white and we're black, but you don't see it as being white and black. We just see it as we're this group of people, and we're together, and we'll do anything for each other. You know what I mean? And if I call him and say I need this, he'll do it. And his wife, she'll say a few words. She'll go, "Oh, here's Dave," and we might talk for a couple hours. And it's just that, you know, I know her too, and we get together. But it's like, you know, I could tell him anything, and he could tell me anything, and we can discuss anything. And I mean, it's like, I guess that's what you would call your brother, or your sisters, because that's the way we are. And it's really, I didn't think about it that way at first, but it is.
Maryland. Was that the only area that you, I know you were there the longest, but was that the only area where you felt that type of closeness to your other workers?
Yes, I did, because like I said, I worked on repair, and I didn't care that much for that group. It was like, it was three groups. You had the people in the booth, because they're in the booth and they're with each other. Then you had the ones who were outside the booth in this section. Then you had the ones that were down the other end who were sanding and stuff. So I didn't think of them that way. And I was up in 21-2 for a few months. And that was that line where they did the final polishing. And I didn't see them. You know how you can just fill it with people? You're either going to either with them or you're not. They're, you know, you got something in common, something. And I didn't have anything in common with them, you know. It's just the way it was, I guess.
One more question for me. Having worked in trim and having worked in paint also, and it's like you said, back where you worked with the small group of people, it didn't matter that people were black or white, you just got along. Once again, was that a unique situation as far as that not being a problem? Or did you find that in the other areas that you worked also?
It wasn't a problem in the other areas, but it just like I said, it just that we had nothing, we didn't click like I did when I got in this area. I think it was just the people. You know, some people, you have things. Okay. It's not like, even in the metal cleaner, it's not like we all did the same, because I like to read and work puzzle. Dave liked to listen to the radio. And, you know, I mean, that way we didn't have anything in common at all. And the other girl, she liked to play the numbers, so she was always reading those number books. And Stanley just listened to the radio. So it's not even like we all had anything in common at all, but it's just, we did. You know, I guess I can't explain it. It was just there.
Just different members of the family, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Doug yep. Rademacher. Beverly, you worked in trim and you worked in paint. Now, a lot of people never ventured outside of their departments. Did you ever have a chance where you went to the body shop, whether to visit someone or to walk through? Or did you see it for the first time on a tour? What did you think of that?
Okay, the first time I went to the body shop was when they had the first tour of the plant. And I swear to God, I thought it was a science fiction movie. I had never, ever seen anything like that in my life. And the only thing I remember was getting burned by one of those well sparks. And I don't care what people say about you, don't get burned when they shoot those things across the floor at you. They burn you. And I had never, ever wanted to go down there again after I took that first tour.
So, I have a question. Did you worked all those days, you knew you got hurt up in trim, and the environment was open, and there were a lot of people. In the body shop, when you saw that people had come to work every day while you were up in that special place up in that wash booth, could you imagine the life that those people every day came to work and worked in that environment? Did it ever cross your mind?
Now, this is what I used to tell people. I know I've been really, really fortunate. The hardest job I've ever had in Fisher Body was the one in the trim. And my first day in Metal Clean, I complained about my fingers hurting. And because of the door hook, and we had an old-fashioned kind where you had to squeeze. But it's like that was my only complaint. And I said, I do feel sorry for everyone who's just really working hard around here, but I'm just really lucky. I just simply lucked out, you know. And I did used to think about people who were working hard. You know, I really did. And I used to say, those are some heck of some good people. Because I don't think I could have handled it. I really don't. I've just never worked hard all the years I've been there. And that is really strange. Because my first job on repair, and I had to put a sheet of paper on the door. I simply papered the door if you were painting something on that side so it wouldn't overspray. Then I got the job where you cleaned up before they painted. Then I went upstairs and I'm just wiping between the pickup guy and the polishing guy, just wiping so he could see. And then back there, Metal Clean, where I'm not doing too much anything. So those are the jobs I've had around there. I don't know how I lucked into them.
Jerry Smith, when we go to the new planet, LDT, you do plan on working out there, right?
Yeah, I got to go.
What part of the plant did you put in for?
I put in for environmental, and I didn't get it because I was praying I would. And then I had next QC, which I got one of those. But I am really terrified of going to the new plant because I've never worked hard at the old plant. So I'm really terrified of having to have to really work. And, you know, the unknown is scary. And I have no idea how to really work after all the years I've done nothing.
Could you explain what QC is?
Well, that's quality control. That as much as I know. And the job I pick, I don't have the slightest idea what it is that a friend of mine, Lori Patterson, had to go Thursday. And I had to go this past Monday, which was the 12th. And she told me what she picked. So the first job the lady said was the one where you drive a car off the line, across the rattle track, and either drive it to repair or to the buy thing. And I was praying, like, please let me get that. Let me get that. First guy they called, he was on second shift with me, and it was this one open. And he took that. After that, I didn't hear anything I wanted. Because when she got to explaining these jobs, I was going, like, that's going to be a lot of work. So I said, you have my friend Lori Patterson's name on there. I said, whatever she picked, if it's anything on second shift, could I have it? And she said, oh, there's one left. And I said, thank you. And what it's about, I couldn't tell you. She just told me it was pretty good and to try to get it. So that's what I did. So when I have to go for training is when I'll know more.
Beth, Mayor Coulter, how long have you lived in Lansing?
I lived here since I came here. When I finished high school in 71, my aunt and uncle, she worked at O's and he worked at Motor Wheel, and their son was spending the summer with us. And so I brought him home and I simply stayed here and I never went back home.
So, where were you from?
Birmingham, Alabama.
So coming to Lansing and they worked at Oldsmobile, what had you heard about working in the factory before you came here?
I hadn't heard anything. I didn't know anything about it. And like I said, I just came to bring their son home.
And, well, since you've been here, we've been through a lot of name changes. Can you tell us about how you felt about the name changes and how you feel about the whole factor of this plant being closed after you had your own little corner for over 18 years?
Well, I don't even go with the name change. I always call it Fisher Body. I always have, and I still do, because I noticed one time I tried to call it whatever they changed to one time. Was it LCA or something? And the person go like, what is that? You mean, and I said, Fisher Body. Oh, yeah, Fisher Body. And so it's like the people don't accept the name change. So I say Fisher Body. Then at the union meeting Sunday when they said they were going to tear it down, that shocked me more than anything because I don't know, I just thought it was going to stand a couple of more years. Maybe I'll be ready then. You know, I was just really amazed. So I've been telling everybody, and everybody go like, I want to see that. And I said, I want to make sure I come down because, I said, I don't know, I think I might actually cry because it's like I spend a lot of my life in here with people. And some of them I'll see and some I won't because even the people I'm closest to, we're going to be split up going different places at the new plant. But I know I can call them, but it's not like I used to see them every day. And that's going to be a big adjustment, seeing different people every day after so many years and wondering, am I going to click with them? You know, it's like I want to feel comfortable these next 5 years I'm going to work. And am I going to be comfortable with these new people who I don't know anything about? You know, we don't like change. And I know I don't like it. I just want to be with my old crowd and we could just work together again, you know?
Jerry Smith, in talking about when you went into the plant as a new hire or even later on, was there any pranks pulled on you?
No. I have this attitude. I don't think anybody would even try to pull one on me. The only problem I had when I hired in, and I didn't know it was a problem with me, this one guy was pointing and talking one night. So I asked the glass guy next to me, I said, is he talking to you? He said, no, I think he's talking to you. So I said, are you talking to me? He goes, yeah, do your job right. And I'm like, what is he talking about? My job doesn't have anything to do with him, right? So, and I never said too much anything. So then I told him, I said, which is bad to say, I called him a punk and this and that and the other. And I told him, heck, he got his hair done where I got mine done. And I know what he was. And I'd come down there and I'd put my foot up his tail to bring it out of his mouth and this, that, and the other. And then everybody around there got to looking at me like, whoa, she can talk, right? And that was about the closest anybody. And I never had that problem after that.
Is there any other questions from anybody in the group?
Well, yes, Beverly. Did you have a chance to meet any of the plant managers? I'm Doug Rademacher.
I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I've never really wanted to meet any management people. Not that I dislike them. It's just that once I went to a meeting, and that's when we had first started building the new jobs, the olds and the Chiva and the other. And we're at this meeting, and he goes like, we've got to work together and our fortune tied together. I said, yeah, I've got GM stock. I want my stock to stay up. And he tells how he was at a dealership and the door fit wasn't proper or something. And they sold Nissans there and the door's fine. And so I just asked him, I said, but why are you telling us this? I am a line worker. I can only do what you give me to do and tell me how to do it. So if you have a problem with anything else, then that's a management problem. So he looked at me like she's not on the same page with me. So I've never cared too much because I just feel this way. If you're going to talk to me about something, talk to me about something that really I have some control over. When it comes to design of these jobs, the fit, the finish, I have no control. When it gets to me, you say do it this way, and I got to, you know, try to do it that way.
Doug Rademacher, could you tell me about your experience with the union? What do you think about the UAW? Did you have a need for representation ever, and have you seen your leadership change a number of times? What do you think about all that?
You know, I've had really good experience. I've had to have committee call. I've got a day off because the little supervisor and I was having a problem. But I got paid for it after I showed him the light. And so I've got to admit, you know, I used to think, you know, I'm paying union dues for nothing because, you know, you never get a union call. And you always feel like the troublemakers get all the perks, you know. Say me, the troublemaker get a union call like this, you know, and they just seem to get all the things. But after that, I said, yeah, I'd rather work where there's a union than not. You know, I don't care what anybody say. Paying union dues and having a union is the best thing in the world.
Mike Fleming.
Bev, throughout your time, you've been here since 1979, what would you consider a benefit that the union has bargained for you, the one that you appreciate the most?
Well, now that I'm older, it's the health care. Because now I'm taking like 3 pills a day that I have to take every day. And then I have 3 other that I take when needed. So, I mean, I was like healthy until a couple of years ago. And it's like now, it's like every time I look around, I'm getting another pill that I got to take the rest of my life. So, and I look at what I pay in that little slip they give you, how much it actually costs. And when you're going to be on something the rest of your life, I mean, it's just, I'm glad I've got some health care.
You've got children and grandchildren.
Right.
Have you had an opportunity to utilize the TAP, the tuition assistance plan, through the conference?
Oh, yes, I definitely. My daughter, she graduated from the U of M, and we used every dime of the TAP money for that. Oh, yes, it was a godsend. I mean, a lot of people say they hate going through all that paperwork and the hassle, but like I tell anybody, use it. And I, you know, use my TAP funds. I go to school, and now I'm just taking the free classes over at Building 66. So I'm just, you know, use, because I figure if you don't use it, they're going to look at, that's something we could cut. Nobody use it, you know, so why not cut that out?
Community, what are you active in anything within your community?
Well, I'm doing community service at the Cancer Society because I used to drive patients for them, so I called them when the plant was going to close down. So I'm out there, you know, 5 days a week, and I drive patients, and I enjoy that because I like meeting people who, you know, they've got this, they don't even think it's a death sentence. They just think they've got this illness, they can deal with it. And when you talk to people like that, you don't have any problems. And when I see those little kids there for treatment, you definitely don't have problems. I don't care what aches and pains I've got, I don't have any problems.
Jerry Smith, we've been called the capital of quality. What would you attribute that to?
Well, I think people at Fisher Body actually care about what they were doing. You know, we might grumble and complain, but I really do. Everybody really care about putting out a good car because your family and friends. And I have one friend, the only thing she will buy is a Grand Am when they first start making them, and she loves them. I mean, that's the only car she will buy. And, you know, I hear other people where I'm working at now who I would never buy a Lansing car. I would never buy an American car. So I tell them like this here, fine and dandy. But pretty soon, when you keep sending your money overseas, you won't have a job to even buy that. But I just think we all care, because I think we take pride in working at Fisher Body. I mean, it's a living, but I think you also take pride in any place you work, especially when you're there as much as you're at home, and you take pride in your home.
Doug Rademacher. Beverly, do you ever sit back and think about how many cars you've built since 1979, and do you ever wonder where they all go?
No, I think back and say, I don't believe I stayed here this long. I never thought about the number of cars we produce. I guess because when I see them, it's always just metal, and I don't actually see the colors and everything else. So to me, I guess I've never looked at them as being a car. To me, it's like a puzzle that's been put together, and I'm just looking at raw metal. So I never think that I'm the one who's actually building that nice colored car going down through trail, because I just feel like the other people doing all that work.
Excuse me.
Mike?
I got one more question, Bev, about your union activities. Do you participate in your local elections? Do you vote within your local union and within your community?
Oh, definitely. I always get out and vote because I like to make sure I talk. Okay, I tell people, if you don't go and vote, then don't complain. Don't complain about anything. So I make sure I vote, and I can complain about anything I want because I took the time to go vote. And you know, when you hear those people complaining about stuff, and then I'll go like this one guy I work with, he was complaining. So I said, well, did you go vote? Well, no, I had to go get something to eat. Well, if you could run out of that shop and go to drive to Burger King, you could go to the Union Hall and vote. So like I told him, don't complain about nothing. So that's where I am about any election, local, state, city. I get out and vote, and then I can complain when a sorry person is in office because at least I voted and tried to keep them out.
Beverly, one more question from me. This is Doug Rademacher. You you say you're from Alabama, mm-hmm. and now you've put in a full lifetime of commitment to General Motors up here. Do you ever think when you're done, will you go back, or is Lansing your home now forever? Or what?
Well, Lansing is my home because where I'm from, Birmingham, is a large place. It's on the order of Detroit. So to me, Lansing is a really small place. So when I was home last, and it's like the traffic and everything, and I don't think I could deal with all that. To me, this Lansing is this little bitty hick town, and I can go this way and be, you know, this way, and you're there 15 minutes. You know, if you're in Birmingham, you want to go shopping, I'm talking, you got to take a ride. And the highways and people are nuts when they drive. So I think I'll just be in this little small town. And I did have a lot of friends ask me that when I was there last year, would I move back there? And I said, no, it's just way too busy.
Jerry Smith, Bev, is there anything that we haven't asked you that you would like to add to the interview?
No, I don't think so. But I did enjoy working at the old plant, though. Did someone ask me that? I did enjoy it. I enjoy going in there. Because, you know, you're going to see your other family. And then I enjoyed leaving because then you're going to see the other family, you know. But I did. I enjoyed my time.
Okay. We'd like to thank you for your interview.
Thank you, Bev. Thanks for coming, Bev.
Okay.